Welcome to Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug, episode 17. You got three of us tonight that I can see. You've got myself with Stan the Fury Dragon, editor of the Ultima Codex. We're also joined again by Linguistic Dragon.
Hello, once again. I'm Linguistic Dragon, author of the Ultima Journeys blog.
And we're also joined by Adric, who's able to make it tonight. Adric, sorry.
That's all right. Adric Dragon, once upon a time author of Ultima 5 for iPad, back when getting such a thing to happen was more difficult.
Yes, it's a little easier now in the era of iDOS. iDOS 2. Okay, then. So, just before we actually jump in, I have a little story to share, and I'd like to give a shout-out, actually, to my brother Simon. As we were talking about just before the show started, it was my wife's birthday last week, and we had a few people come over to the house on Saturday for dinner, which actually, I mean, it turned out to be a really good time overall, but just as we were cutting into the cake, there was a knock on the front door, and I opened it to see my brother Simon standing there, accompanied by his girlfriend Bridget. First thing I learned was that my brother had a girlfriend. But anyways, my wife's side of the family does this a lot more than mine really does. But we've certainly adopted the tradition as well in our household. New people, and in particular new significant others, always seem to end up, you know, kind of being initially introduced to the family at the largest gathering possible.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, certainly that's what happened to me. First time I met my wife's family, most of her sisters were there. I think her grandparents were there, various uncles, aunts, cousins, friends of the family. And it was like her dad's birthday or possibly her parents' anniversary, which they're close together in time. They actually often co-celebrate the two events. So that could have been it for all I know. I just remember that it was in May. So, anyways, we had over-prepared on the food a little bit, and included among that was some really delicious salmon, actually. My wife's grandfather passed away earlier this year, or no, I guess maybe it was late last year now, I don't even remember. Not too terribly long ago. And but one of the things that he often did was, you know, make sure that whenever you left his place, he would furnish you with, you know, fine BC coast salmon. I mean, he lived in Vancouver. He himself was a boat captain, and you know, he knew all the fishermen. He knew who to talk to. So he'd go and he'd buy like the day's catch right off the dock, and it'd be like frozen the same day. Okay, so about as fresh salmon as it's really possible to get here in the landlocked province of Alberta, and really delicious stuff. So my brother dived right in, and Bridget joined in shortly after with only a minimal amount of prompting. And then I actually went outside because the kids were playing in the backyard. We had the pool set up and everything like that. And my buddy Colin was out on the deck. So we were watching, you know, keeping an eye on the kids and just chatting. Colin and me go way, way back. And meanwhile, inside, you know, everybody, I guess, basically sat around and was, you know, talking with Simon and with the new girl, as it was. So getting all the details about how they'd met and such like that. And at some point, and I only heard snippets of this conversation, but at some point, Simon, and I assume this was for Bridget's benefit, started talking about, you know, me and some of the things that I do and some of the recordings that, you know, I had done and posted, and how he'd enjoyed listening to them. Talked about, you know, passion for the topics that I evidently demonstrate, games especially. So assuming that he was talking about the podcast, because I only have like a handful of videos on YouTube and they're really old. that it was good to hear that feedback. So evidently we're doing something not too bad at all. So shout out to my brother. All right. So what are we talking about this week? Well, what we are talking about is the question of how necessary is combat in RPGs? And where this starts, some time ago, Linguistic actually was the one who stumbled on a discussion thread, although the source has been lost to time, asking the question of whether there should be an option to make combat skippable in some RPGs. Would it be worth it, the poster asked, to offer players a way to experience a game's story, even if they found the gameplay itself impenetrable or frustrating? The topic kind of devolved into name-calling and various other retorts because internet forum.
Basically.
You know, if you wanted to play a game primarily for the story, then, well, there are these things called books or movies, and go do that. That's what the easy difficulties are for, you know, another argument to be made there. And that's sufficient concession, and, you know, you shouldn't be playing on that anyways, because how dare you call yourself a gamer? And that's what Let's Plays are for. If all else fails, you can watch someone else play the game on YouTube. But it is an intriguing question. It's certainly one that I can relate to, having had some frustrations and having still finding frustrations with combat in some games. So there's the question. Exactly how important or how prevalent even does combat have to be in an RPG? And even if we couldn't find the original forum post, actually, I noticed that Kotaku, there was an article on Kotaku that explored this same issue a couple of years ago, noting that for many games, and they called out Mass Effect in particular, which is actually kind of interesting because it was, I think, Mass Effect 3 that was one of the first RPGs I can think of that offered the, they offered two different modes. They offered... Well, three. They offered, like, you know, play it vanilla, so you get all the combat and all the story. And then they offered the story mode, which downplayed the combat side of it. And then they offered, as I recall, kind of a mode that just lets you breeze through the story elements and get back to the action. But anyways.
Wait, really? How have I not heard about this before?
I'm very sure. I'm not so sure about that third mode, but I thought that was there. But definitely the first two, I'm very sure about. You can play Mass Effect vanilla, you know, so you get all the story, all the combat, but then they did include a mode that downplays the combat side, which is basically the story mode.
Wow. Well, considering Mass Effect is one of those that I have a hard time getting into because of the gameplay.
It's only Mass Effect 3. Okay. The first two, you just got to shoot your way through. But the third one...
Well, it's one out of three. Yeah. That's 33% of a problem solved right there.
Yeah. That just occurred to me now. I may have to pencil that one into the show notes. Anyways, Kotaku did call out Mass Effect, though, alongside some other games. And they noted that, you know, for these games, they almost serve as storytelling frameworks supported by an advanced combat engine. There's actually even a TV Tropes page called RPGs Equal Combat. You okay there?
I'm fine. Some tea went down the wrong pipe for a moment.
It happens. Tasty tea. Why can't I breathe you?
Oh, if only.
Yeah. Anyways, TV Tropes page, RPGs Equals Combat, which offers actually a lot of examples of RPGs that are really combat heavy, and ones in which combat's more optional. Although how they don't actually mention Ultima 6, which we'll get to. They do mention Ultima 7, but how they missed Ultima 6 is beyond me.
And me.
Yeah. All right. So, let's talk a little bit about games first in which combat isn't necessary. Okay, so one example in Linguistic, I believe this is yours, you cited Planescape Torment.
Ah, yes. Planescape is, well, Planescape is the other game besides the Ultimas that I tend to tout as a wonderful example of what games are capable of. But while it does let the player fight through most situations that they're presented with, there's only two or three, I think it's only two, that the player is actually forced to fight. And notably, the confrontation with the final boss is not one of those. Depending on how the player has built up their character and what choices they've made, you can actually beat the big boss of the game without having to strike a single blow, which was actually something that I found a lot more satisfying for a final confrontation when I was playing through the game myself. So, yeah, there's a lot of the game where you can just run away and either run away or talk your way out of.
Nice. I know another one that we... Fallout's kind of similar in some respects in that, at least with respect to the final boss, because, you know, there isn't... Technically in Fallout, you don't have to fight the final boss. Let's see, what's he called? The Master?
I don't know. I never got that far in Fallout, but I think that's right.
Can't remember. He's like, anyways, he's got big frigging machine guns. Anyways, you don't, technically you don't actually have to fight him. You can actually either convince him to destroy himself, is actually one of the possible outcomes depending on skills. And I think some stuff that you do in game, you can also actually set off a nuke in the base a little bit earlier on, if you feel. Which it's still aggressive, but technically you're not using the combat engine. In fact, at least you know according to the Fallout Wiki, Fallout bizarrely, given that you know, I mean, it is kind of presented as you know this post-apocalyptic, they have a fairly violent game. It does seem to be the case that, much as is the case with Ultima 6, there's remarkably few direct kills that you need to make in order to complete the game. Unlike Ultima 6, it's probably substantially more difficult to actually pass the game that way. Ultima 6 is really never hard to pass under any circumstance. Unless you actually do like try and it, actually arguably Ultima 6 is hardest to pass when you do try and fight everything. You know, it's much easier to, and I you just wrote about this actually, Linguistic.
Yes, I did.
Just in Destard. it's so much easier to sneak your way through Destard than to fight your way through Destard.
Invisibility rings for the win.
Yeah. And actually, Reapers in that game are profoundly annoying enemies to fight. Because it's like, you barely notice them when you're walking through the deep forest, and then all of a sudden the avatar gets hit by like three sleeping bolts, and then, so you're confused, and then the next round, like, half the rest of the party gets taken out by sleeping bolts, and then whoever's left starts getting bombarded by magic arrows. It's really terrible. Actually, I hate fighting groups of Reapers.
Well, who doesn't hate fighting groups of Reapers?
Yeah. Now I got to find that meme I made. Was the what was the meme? It was a split frame image, and on top it was Harbinger from the Mass Effect series, who's like the boss of the Reapers, who are like the big bads of the game.
Oh, boy.
It's like, you know, the caption that I put was something like, I am the most feared Reaper in gaming history. But then the bottom half of the image was that Reaper that's in the basement of the castle in Ultima Underworld 2. And the only
Except
caption
for
I
me.
Could think... Yeah, and the only caption I could think of was just like, bitch, please. Because that guy, that one Reaper is just like, he is a menace. That thing is just a menace. Like, you come around the corner and you encounter it and you just, oh. You can sidestep that one, though. That Reaper, I believe, is avoidable. And that's actually kind of the better strategy to employ, because you're really not equipped as a level one avatar in that game to take him on.
No.
So when you get to that game, remember that, Linguistic.
It's been in the back of my head for a while.
Other games. Now, some of these, there's room for debate as to whether they really qualify as an RPG, but if the RPG Codex is willing to consider something like Deus Ex as, broadly speaking, an RPG, a PC RPG, then I figure most of these will probably be okay. So in games like, Dishonored actually features... Dishonored's weird, because despite being a game about an assassin, there is actually an achievement, and indeed there is a method for passing the game without actually directly killing a single person. And evidently Dishonored 2 will feature the same achievement. So, now with Dishonored, it's a little bit... With Dishonored, it's a little bit different because... you can often use the environment as a weapon. you might still actually wind up killing people, but you don't necessarily wind up doing it by attacking them with a weapon directly. Deus Ex Human Revolution is another one. Features a similar achievement, at least in the Director's Cut re-release. The original version of DXHR had a few unavoidable fights. And in fact, you got a lot more experience in DXHR if you were able to navigate obstacles and levels stealthily without getting into fights. I gather that the new Deus Ex will, broadly speaking, be the same. There seems to be some confusion as to whether there's unavoidable fights, but at least the initial impression they gave was that, this was not going to be the case. There was going to be an achievement for passing the game without killing anybody. And then there's stuff like, Alpha Protocol, which unfortunately not nearly enough people played, Obsidian Entertainment's spy action RPG. It also can be killed without, or can be completed without killing anybody. With the caveat that you do actually have to shoot some foes, but you have the option of using tranks. You can knock them out. So. So that's kind of a brief summary, I think, of games in which combat isn't necessary. And before we start to really dissect the actual concept of, combat in RPGs as a necessity, I think we'd probably be profitable to talk about some games in which combat is really genuinely unavoidable and maybe even the focus. So, Adric, you kind of had a thought that I think would lead us well into that section.
Yeah, well, as I've been listening to you talk, I've also been formulating an argument to my own argument, but... My basic feeling is that combat was essential to like the prototypical RPG, Dungeons and Dragons, which evolved out of war games. Gary Gygax favored a medieval period war game, and he developed some fantasy rules to supplement that, so you could have magic and things, and then develop this full-on role-playing game that was still really rooted in wargaming and in combat as the differentiator between your classes and that really defined your role. So I submit that if you don't have combat skills to differentiate, in Ultima is a great example. You've got different skills and abilities for your mage or your fighter or your ranger or what have you.
Well, in some Ultimas.
Some Ultimas. But, that's the role in role-playing games, and that's the key differentiator. Now, the counter-argument is, but now you get to the later Ultimas, like Ultima 6 or Ultima Online, where your role could be a baker, and you can go have those skills and exist that way. In Ultima 6, you can participate in the economy and not pursue the quests at all if you really want to. And that's a role-playing game, and you're playing a role, and it's differentiated by these skills that you may develop, especially in Ultima Online, where you could actually build your, you know, bowcraft skill and sell bows to the wandering adventurers. I feel like combat is, maybe it's optional, but it's typically got to be there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's certainly not a problem to list off RPGs in which some kind of combat's essential or unavoidable. You know, TV Tropes page, again, is full of examples. And, you know, there are literally hundreds of titles to choose from here. Let's maybe not enumerate all of them, but a couple of illustrative examples.
We'd be here all night.
Yeah, just all week, month, whatever. But there are a few examples, and I'm going to go with some fairly recent ones, which we've talked about on the podcast a bit before. Thinking of things like, you know, well, the Dragon Age titles, you know, fairly recent example, fairly big thing in the RPG space right now. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, which, of course, I never pass up an opportunity to talk about.
Surprise, surprise.
I know. And it's not that they're not, you know, they're excellent RPGs, certainly. You know, the fact that you have to fight your way through them doesn't detract, with some reservations, which we'll get to, from their quality as games and as RPGs. Actually, Rock, Paper, Shotgun just today had another article praising Reckoning as kind of this, you know, underappreciated hit. And Rowan Kaiser, who, yeah, he's, works as a game journalist now, but he worked on the Ultima 6 project too. And he has in the past praised Reckoning's combat at some length, actually. Back when joysticks still existed, of course, they've been folded into Engadget now. But what did he say? He says, there are a large number of compromises which are necessary to make massively multiplayer games accessible. Combat is real-time so that slow players don't annoy everyone, but it's slowly paced with cooldowns so that players with better reflexes can't dominate. Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning avoids that combat mechanic trap by making its battles something that could really only work in a single-player setting. They take their cues from action games like God of War, with fast-paced combos, dodging, stylized executions. This makes Reckoning play smoothly. Combat is fast and fun, and appropriate to the solo, single-character structure of the game. Since it isn't stressful or dissonant, it's easier to focus on the exploration in the world of Amalur. And my own thoughts have kind of run in parallel to that. You know, combat and Reckoning, contra the rest of the game, the rest of the game is very methodical. You know, it really does play. So I've heard it described as a single player MMO, and that's not an unfair description because much of the rest of the approach to the game is very methodical, exploring the world, crafting, dealing with, you know, the various houses that you accumulate. They're all, you know, very methodically presented, and you can really take them at a slow pace. It's actually a really fun game to just get out and walk around in, because big, huge games, like, their designers were top, top tier, and it's just one beautiful vista after another as you're walking through this thing. Combat, though, is anything but methodical. It's kinetic, it's brutal, fast-paced, tactical, and the key to it is movement. Movement and innovation. You know, you have this array of weapons and abilities, and while you settle into particular patterns at some point, the combat rarely becomes boring. And in a certain sense, it's this combat that kind of ties it together. It's got such a frantic and frenetic tempo that it allows the rest of the game, the crafts, the questing, things like that, to proceed at a measured pace, but nothing ever feels slow. Not all of the Dragon Age games handle the idea of combat as a progression mechanic. And that's really what we're talking about here is, you know, when you have combat in a game that is unavoidable, it's part of the progression mechanics of the game. It's not to say that there aren't other progression mechanics in the game, but it's to say that when you cannot avoid these fights, they are part of the experience of progression in the game. They are part of the mechanics of progressing through the game. Dragon Age 2, certainly, and it was much lambasted for other reasons, but it certainly improved the experience of combat in the series. Combat in Dragon Age Origins was just a plodding bore. The wave-based combat sure earned some criticism for Dragon Age 2, and it didn't always make sense in context. But the overall experience of getting into a fight in Dragon Age 2 was better. it didn't drag the game down. Dragon Age Inquisition, its combat seems to be, I'm still not that far into it, a bit of a balance between the two. I don't find it quite as fun as Reckoning's combat. So thank you, Ian Fraser and Big Huge Games and anybody who worked there. You've basically spoiled fantasy RPG combat for me, probably forever. But, and then of course Mass Effect, which we previously mentioned, also actually has really, really good combat, although the cover system is broken in the first one. But I almost want to sidestep it in the discussion here because it's a very different kind of combat as well, in that it's almost all arranged in nature. I mean, you know, whereas in a fantasy game, you know, yeah, you have your bows and your crossbows and you can throw magic spells at enemies, but you also, you know, this is where you expect to see the swords. This is where you expect to see the daggers and the spears and the pole arms and whatever else, right? All of this range of weapons that are designed to get you up close and personal with the monsters you're fighting. Whereas, I mean, Mass Effect, it's portraying the far future, but, you know, it's essentially taking the more, you know, essentially taking modern combat and extrapolating it to the future. And most of combat in Mass Effect is designed around ranged weaponry. If you're actually up close and personal with the enemies, you've screwed up somewhere. So, apart from like the arm blade thingy, but that's kind of a special case because it's an attack that you have to execute in stealth. Most of the battles play out as gunfights. They play out at range. It's not unfun combat. It's actually, you know, really, really quite peppy. It's reasonable in Mass Effect 1, and it only really gets better as you progress through the series. But it's harder to make that comparison to fantasy RPGs because it's, you know, designed around this very different approach to how close you get to your enemy. I guess the one exception in the sci-fi context might be Knights of the Old Republic, which was BioWare's previous outing at making a sci-fi RPG. But even this doesn't really compare to Mass Effect because, I mean, A, it was kind of, you know, just built on top of the Neverwinter Nights engine, which is built around fantasy combat, built around Dungeons and Dragons combat mechanics. And realistically, the combination of blasters and lightsabers in KOTOR, yeah, more or less behave like bows and swords in a typical fantasy RPG. Switching gears for a moment, and I think games like Knights of the Old Republic, and other games that use like engines based on the BioWare Aurora engine, so that's Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2, actually The Witcher, the original The Witcher, Dragon Age Origins, Jade Empire, they really serve to illustrate how combat can be a real impediment to progression in a game. And even something that turns players off of a game entirely, and actually I have the same basic criticisms about Shroud of the Avatar right now. You can kind of see it in some of the earlier games too. The Infinity Engine games kind of have the same problem. And it's one thing I think that Obsidian did fairly well. At least, you know, they refined it in Pillars of Eternity. The experience of combat in Pillars is much more enjoyable than in, like, you know, Icewind Dale or any of those games. It's something I hope isn't going to be a problem in Sword Coast Legends, which I'm really looking forward to otherwise. There's a great blog post up at Sinister Design, actually, which speaks directly to the issue I'm talking about here, which is essentially the use of, and you know, you mentioned this too, Adric, the over-reliance on more, in their view, of Dungeons & Dragons-derived rule sets in the combat mechanics. The post at Sinister basically says in its opening that the problem with and the kludginess of the D&D combat system and its overuse has really caused modern RPG developers to jump ship and head to real-time combat. And you can certainly see a lot of that kludginess illustrated in games like Neverwinter Nights, in games like Dragon Age Origins. I mean, I watched the combat animations in Dragon Age Origins, and it's just like I can just about see the dice rolling. You know? So, okay, yeah, you bonk him, and then you bonk him, and then, oh, wait, there was a status effect there, and wow, this is terrible to watch.
Confession, I never finished KOTOR because I got stuck in a fight and kind of got done beating my head against it and moved on.
Well, I rage quit DAO twice, you know, in the origin mission. You know, I never even got as far as, like, when the king gets betrayed. Because it's just like, really? I was so burnt because it's such a combat-heavy game, especially in the start. I was so burned out on fighting. It's just like, wow, this is the most boring combat I've ever encountered. And man, I came through Ultima 7.
It's the same reason I've never made my way through Baldur's Gate 2.
Yeah, similar issues there. I get that the Infinity Engine games are widely regarded as excellent RPGs, but honestly, the only one I can really handle for a while is Icewind Dale. Because it's a different expectation. The Icewind Dales are much more like they were the action oriented set in the
Infinity They were meant to be approached tactically.
Exactly. So it's just like, well, you know what? At least in this one, I'm expecting it to just throw walls of monsters at me, so I'll go along with that for a while. But even then, I burn out after a little bit. So, now I'm not entirely sure I agree with Sinister that, you know, the kludginess of that D&D combat system, and especially with its randomization, which is another annoying thing. You know, it's like the animation shows me hitting the other player, you know, hitting the enemy NPC. At the very, you know, don't tell me I missed. Tell me I did no damage. We were having this discussion with the new Project Britannia producers, right? Because it's just like, you know, how do we want to handle hits and misses and, you know, computing hits and misses? And my thought was just like, we don't. We shouldn't. It's just, if my sword object collides with the enemy object, that's a hit, you know? Call it a hit. Sure, maybe the math going on in the background says that due to whatever combination of factors, it's a glancing blow and I don't hurt him, you know? You know, maybe he takes no damage from the hit, but it's a hit, you know? If I miss him...
Clearly, you've hit him.
Exactly, you know? So that's my thoughts going in. And, you know, that's the thing I think that annoys me a lot, too, is, like, you know, like, I can see I'm hitting you. Why is the game telling me I'm not hitting you? You know, tell me I'm not damaging the big dragon with my piddly little dagger. Sure, I'll believe you. But don't tell me I'm not hitting him.
Well, you know. And that goes right back to D&D, where it's... You might make contact, but it's not a hit because of armor class, etc.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? It's just like, no, I mean, it's... I can buy that I'm not going to damage the big dragon with my piddly little dagger. But if I land the hit, at least call it a hit.
Don't at least call it what it is.
Yeah. And so I think part of this, too, is just, you know, I think a lot of this actually has to do with the advent of 3D, and in particular 3D-capable game consoles. I think that's actually what's really driven the transition towards real-time combat, but it's also certainly the source of, you know, a lot of the angst that we all just expressed there, right? Because it's one thing in a 2D game. I mean, in Ultima 6, I don't see my sword swing. In Ultima 7, I do, but it's kind of nebulous as to what it's doing, you know? I mean, I see it pass over Dupre, too, right? And I don't expect it to lock
his hand. It's abstracted a little.
It's more abstracted. In a 3D game, it's much less abstracted. You know, you can see the objects, and you can see them in a space that has volume, and you can see, okay, yeah, this thing did in fact intersect with this thing. There was a hit there, whether there's damage or not. Something hit something. And so, you know, I'll happily agree that a couple of times I've played Dungeons & Dragons, you know, in a pen and paper setting, it certainly works well enough in that setting. But I do think it's a liability as a combat mechanic in a CRPG. And I think it was back in episode 2 that I, you know, well, I mean, I already mentioned, you know, rage quitting DAO. It wasn't fun for me the first time I played it. The combat, it was boring. It was dreary. And if the game, and this is the point, it's like, you know, it's fine if the combat's optional, right? You know, DXHR could have terrible combat. It doesn't, but it could. And that would be fine because I can avoid it. You know, there's another way around that enemy over there. There's another way through this level that doesn't require me to slaughter everything in sight. If a game is going to require me to navigate hundreds of combat encounters, making the combat a cumbersome burden is not going to work. And this is my basic problem with Shroud of the Avatar. I love walking around Novia. I love exploring the new places. But if I get sucked into a fight, a random encounter or whatever, the interface, the hotbar, the slowdown of it all, just I have a real problem with that. I find it troublesome to stay immersed in the game past that point. DAO, the only reason I was ever able to pass it was because I found some mods that basically sped up the combat animations and made, you know, made my hero do more like of the epic kills. Then it was just like, okay, well, at least the combat's a little faster. It's a little more fun. And it gets out of the way. And that's the nice thing about Reckoning. It's just, it gets the combat out of the way. I mean, the fights are there and they happen and they're fast and they're fun and they're visceral, but they're also over very quickly. And then I can get back to exploring. Then I can get back to interacting with NPCs. I can get back to the quests. I can get back to the story. And, you know, once I had that happening for DAO, yeah, it was a great plot, lots of great social commentary, just engaging characters, engaging setting. But because combat is so central to actually getting through that game, I mean, I was at risk of missing all of that because it was so terrible getting through the fights. And, you know, it's worth noting, too, that, I mean, D&D fundamentally is a turn-based system. Even if it's been implemented in a real-time game, you know, everybody's still kind of taken their turn.
Yep.
There are other games that have turn-based combat systems that work very, very well. The combat in the first two Fallout games was a highly exaggerated form of turn-based combat. But it worked very, very well because it catered to just about everybody's playstyle. You know, you could get through the fight fairly quickly if you just wanted to. But if you really wanted to, I mean, you had a lot. You could just sit there and think about your next shot for 15 minutes if you wanted to, right?
Wasteland 2 is very similar, too.
How many action points am I going to spend on this guy? Well, okay, hang on. And, you know, you could walk through. It's like, well, okay, it would be this much to shoot him in the leg, but this much to shoot him in the arm. But then, oh, for whatever reason, it's only this much to shoot. Okay, I'm going to go there. And Syndicate wasn't really an RPG, but it had pretty solid turn-based combat as well. You know, that was another fun one to navigate. And, of course, this being the podcast that it is, there's the Ultima games.
We had to get to them eventually.
Yeah. Well, you know, I figured putting them at the end was probably the just better than interspersing them throughout. but it's funny because depending on which Ultima game you look at, and we've alluded to this a little bit, you find different approaches. You know, I wrote some years back, and I've gone back and updated it, an overview of whether, you know, Ultima games can be passed without combat. And the short answer is, well, no, it would seem that none of them can be. So if you're looking for the pure pacifist playthrough, you're out of luck. But you can very nearly do it in Ultima 6. I think it's also, I mean, it's worth mentioning, maybe, that Ultima Forever was actually supposed to have a pure pacifist option, in the form of the druid class. The druids weren't supposed to be able to actually attack other, like, attack NPCs or attack monsters. The druid was going to have to navigate and fend for herself using the environment around her. Ultimately, this was it was never implemented. But yeah, that would have been the thing with the druid, is that, you know, even in the case where the druid might have had to deal damage to an enemy, it would have been through environmental effects only. So, pity they never got to the point where that was able to be implemented. But that would have been, I think, a very interesting approach. Because
very interesting.
Because U4E was a very combat-heavy take on Ultima. It was a very combat-heavy game, for the most part. So it would have been really interesting for them to suddenly graft on this option to do a complete pacifist playthrough. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's the example of, well, I mean, we mentioned Ultima 4 in the show notes, but really it's true of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, really. In which it's essentially impossible to win the game while avoiding combat. And in fact, Ultima 4 makes a point of penalizing you if you run away from a fight. Your valor doesn't increase if you don't get into fights, and it'll decrease if you don't hold your ground against the critters of the land that want to do you harm. You know, Ultima 7 doesn't... You can avoid most of the fights in Ultima 7. You do have to fight Batlin. You can't... there's something about the endgame sequence, the way they've set up the scripting. Hook has to die. If Hook doesn't die, then Batlin doesn't flee, and then I don't think you can actually destroy the Black Gate. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I know that the scripting hinges on Hook's death. So, at the very least, that has to happen. But just also because of how the encounters are implemented, you know, you can just be walking along and all of a sudden that combat music starts to play and you don't see the wolf because it's winding its way through all the trees until it's gnawing on Sentry's leg. you know, things like that. So combat in Ultima 7, not really. Combat in Ultima 8, decidedly non-avoidable. And in Ultima 9 as well. You know, not... although, interesting with Ultima 9, and this was something that Bill Randolph talked about, and granted, how they did it was a little bit weird, but basically Ultima 9 had the kind of hit detection that I'm talking about, where, you know, basically there were basically just little surfaces defined along the weapon objects. And if those intersected with the bounding boxes of an enemy object, then that would count as a hit, and then the game would figure out whether damage was done. This also led to, you know, one of Bill's favorite bugs, which was the pirate that hated the butterfly. Because the pirate's sword isn't a big sword, so it doesn't have a very large hitbox, or it doesn't have a very large impact surface, and the butterfly has a very, very tiny hitbox. And he's like, there was this one pirate that, you know, this one pirate NPC that was in the game that just hated this butterfly. And they actually ultimately had to go into the code, like, because they would just watch him, like, try and wail away at this thing. And just minutes and minutes and minutes of this pirate trying to desperately kill this butterfly. They eventually had to go into the code and actually, like, specifically define, no, pirate, you do not hate the butterfly. Do not attack the butterfly.
I wonder how many hurricanes all those butterfly wings flapping caused.
Well, those columns came from somewhere.
And now we know where they came from. A pirate who hated butterflies.
There we go. How's that for headcanon? Eat your heart out, Golden Flame. All right. But coming back to Ultima 6 for a minute, one thing to note about the game is that all the movement in Ultima 6 is turn-based. You know, everything is turn-based in Ultima 6, inside and outside of combat. What's funny about that is that, you know, when you're walking around outside of combat, it can often be more cumbersome to move around than when you're in combat. You know, if you've ever seen like the swarm of non-hostile insects or
birds,
a warren of rabbits, not counting the one outside Sutek's castle because they attack you. It's annoying as heck because your party just kind of starts to stagger and lurch across the screen, and it's really annoying as all heck.
Yep.
But then when you when you get past that, now you're walking at a brisk pace again when nothing else is in view. So that makes it even worse, because then all of a sudden you hit the slowdown when there's wildlife present all of a sudden along your path. But then you turn on the combat and suddenly everybody's moving at the same speed again. More or less. Fleeing enemies do seem, the guys that are like critically injured and run away, they seem to get a bit of a speed boost. They get like an extra move or two. But for the most part, you know, everybody's moving one square at a time, or, you know, and it just feels more natural. It does make approaching the enemies a bit slower, but paradoxically, the actual exchange of blows feels rather quick, and it doesn't really seem like there's too much randomizing mechanics at work behind each sword strike. It's actually a really well-implemented system overall.
Jarring when you're trucking along and combat starts and you don't realize it started, so you're all moving as a party, and then, oh, blip, 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 blip. Now you're all moving as individuals. I'm in a fight.
Yeah, no, it's...
We'll be here a while.
Pretty much. It was good combat
when you
music.
Haven't realized that you switched combat mode on.
Right. Yep. And then it's like, why is half does. My party staying... Why?
We no, got there.
Why aren't they doing anything? Yellow, we're got over, a bow.
We're over here, guy. Yeah, it always... That was fun. But that was interesting, too, because, you know, like, you could actually see in those moments, it's like, okay, yeah, hey, like, he's set to rear, and he's doing exactly that, and he's set to berserk, and he's, like, looking along my line of sight and, like, running out in front of me. So that was, you know, it was good for illustrating that. But, yeah, if you forget to turn combat mode off, and then it's just like, oh, yeah, right, why is my entire party now spread out, like, across the length of the castle? I mean, what's going on here?
You know, I almost never used the AI settings. I just kept everybody under my control. So it would be, oh, now we're all moving one at a time instead of as a party.
Yeah, I didn't use them too much usually. I'd set most, I mean, if it would basically, if people had a ranged weapon, I would actually wind up setting them to flank. And then if people had a bonking weapon, they would be, I'm encapsulating the bladed weapons alongside the hammers here, but,
big two-handed hammer.
Yeah. They would be, you know, they would just get like, front or forward or whatever the term was there. Front, I think. Sometimes I would like give Segalian a halberd and set him to berserk, but mostly that meant that he was just right there on the front lines with the rest of us. But the AI actually, for a 1990, you know, for a 1990 game, the AI, the combat AI for your companion is actually pretty intelligent. It actually works really, really well. Which I suppose it just, you know, goes to illustrate what a crashing disappointment the combat in Ultima 7 was for just how non-intelligent it was. Just like, okay, combat mode's on, and I guess we're all just a mob, just hitting things. I mean, it was still there, and yeah, it was still there, but fundamentally, you kind of all just ended up in a cluster of swinging weapon animations. It was funny. But so anyways, what is the point that we've established here? I think for me, you know, I think it's especially, you know, as we see RPGs move away from D&D, at least as the source of mechanics, having the option to, you know, to take on an obstacle or a level or an area or the quests in a non-combatant way, I think it should become more prevalent because, of course, you know, we are moving away from the combat-oriented mechanics of D&D. But B, you know, I think it's something that's nice to see. Now, that said, I can't personally envision an RPG that ships with absolutely no combat. I imagine that someone may have attempted to make one, but I don't personally think that that would be a genuinely fun thing. But certainly having the option to sidestep a fight or not is a welcome thing. And I think, you know, for me, and it's funny because we were just actually talking about this on the Shroud of the, on the Ultima Dragons Facebook page. It started when Sirgorn Dragon posted a link to a map of the overworld showing where all the player-owned towns were located. And there's something like 200 and some player-owned towns. Okay, so the overworld's actually peppered with all of these small little municipalities. And there was a big argument going on as to whether this was immersion breaking or not. But then Chris Spears jumped in, actually. Of course, he's, you know, the technical producer for the game. You know, and he was kind of back and forthing with the dragons. But we got this being a discussion on the internet and in an Ultima Dragons group, no less. Of course, we got derailed. And I was admittedly one of the guilty parties in the derailment in that, you know, I also mentioned that I like exploring in Shroud of the Avatar as long as I don't have to fight anything. It's the way they've implemented combat, I really struggle with. And so, you know, was dialoguing a little bit with Chris Spears about that. But, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, my point is that, you know, if combat is going to be essential, and maybe it will be, I mean, it'll depend on the game, but if it's going to be essential, don't make the experience of it a blocker. You know, don't make getting through each fight just this exercise in tedium that is going to have me seriously contemplating Alt-F4ing the game, you know. And again, you know, we come back to, yeah.
Not everybody is going to delight in the mechanics that you have chosen for your combat and find the same joy in the minute detail of how dull your edged weapon is.
Yeah, and I think my issue with combat in Shroud is the same as my issue in Dragon Age Origins. It's not that it's necessarily difficult. I mean, okay, getting wiped by a skeleton when I'm fully kitted out in plate armor seems a little absurd, but it does occasionally happen. But it's more that it just takes forever. You know, combat in Shroud is very slowed down. And it's the same with DAO, right? Because all of the little computations and everything are just too evident. You know, that comment about, I can see the dice rolling, or I could almost see the dice rolling. You know, it's the fights just, they drag on. And, you know, then I play a game like Reckoning or like Dungeon Siege 3 or even like Risen or like Ultima 6 or, you know, the one saving grace of combat in Ultima 7 is that it's usually over really fast. you click the dove and it becomes the flaming sword, and usually a minute later at most you can click it back to the dove. But in some games, just like, wow, like this fight, see, this is taking a long time. Like, seriously, can we resolve this? So, you know, if it's going to be essential, that's fine, but it shouldn't get in the way.
Exactly. I mean, that's basically how I, that's pretty much my thinking precisely. I can't talk tonight. I think there's a dozen different ways to approach an RPG because there's so many different elements to it. You can approach it from, you know, a focus on combat, a focus on story, a focus on setting, a focus on exploration. And I think how important and prevalent you want combat to be depends on what sort of angle you're going for. I mean, if you're going for something combat focused, like, you know, your Diablos or Torchlight or Icewind Dale or Titan Quest, throw it in, throw a lot of it in, throw it all over the place. But if you're doing something, you know, that's more of a focus on exploration, throw in a little more variety, make it more interesting, make combat as much a exploration element as the rest of the world. Like you mentioned with Kingdoms of Amalur, it's hardly ever boring because there's so many different ways you can approach it in the game. If you're doing something that's heavily focused on story, maybe scale back the number of encounters you've got and make them more complex and more meaningful. I mean, nothing really spoils the buildup to a big boss fight like two dozen waves of mooks that you've fought a zillion times before and that you can smack down with one single swipe of your sword. It all depends on what you're trying to do with it. And I think what it all boils down to is, yeah, just don't let it get in the way.
Exactly. That sense of, you know, and I think, you know, like Rowan's point and about how it should just flow. Because, you know, and I mean, this is true, like, you know, this is true of, you know, even like the simplest game on a mobile phone. The game should just, you should just feel like you're moving through it. You know, like there should just be a flow to the gameplay. I get addicted every time I play Jetpack Joyride because it's such a simple game. The mechanics are so absurdly simple. So, you know, touch the screen, guy with jetpack goes up. Let go of screen, guy with jetpack goes down. Done. You can now play Jetpack Joyride. Simple to understand, hard to master, you know, because of course, as you're progressing through the level, more obstacles, and of course, everything's coming at you faster and faster and faster and faster. But it's just fun because it's never, you know, like it flows. And Reckoning's much the same way. You know, you have spanning continents and, you know, these quest lines that can lead you all over the region you're in. some very shallow, you know, storyline stuff, some very deep storyline stuff. And then, yeah, you get into a fight here, you get into a fight there. You got to fight your way through this and that and the other thing. But it all works out, you know, because the fighting is at a very different tempo than the rest of the pace of the game. And the end result is this kind of very smooth experience overall, you know, nothing really gets in the way of anything. Dragon Age, unfortunately, Dragon Age Origins, you know, kind of had the problem of, well, yeah, again, often very expansive areas to explore. And that was fun to just wander around and talk with NPCs and pursue the quest chains. But then the combat was slow. It's just like, well, no, like now we have a problem because now everything feels slow.
And we've got to wade through stacks of it just to get to the next interesting thing. That's a problem.
Yeah. And same criticism about Shroud. You know, it's like, I like being, you know, able to just wander through Novia and just take a stroll. And this is the part that's supposed to feel slow. Oh, but now I'm in a fight. Oh, and this is also really slow. And why are my sword strikes never hitting the skeleton? And why are the slugs coming up in my randomized deck? And why am I even using card combat at all in a single player game? and it just all of these little things that come up, and it's just like, you know, the combat further slows down the experience of the game, which would otherwise be fine. So, all right. Are we done? Or does anyone else have another thing to say?
I think I've said what I meant to.
All right, then. One new thing. And you know what? This is voluntary, but it's a new section that I want to introduce. Where can we find people online? So I'll go first because you can find me online in about a dozen different places. obviously, the Ultima Codex, you know, like that's my thing. I check it regularly. Obviously, I'm always, you know, ready in content to post there. You can find me on Twitter. I mean, you can tweet at the Ultima Codex and I'll get notified about that. I'm also on Twitter at WTF_dragon. So you can find me there. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/KenAndGraceCooley. I think I used Ken.and.grace.cooley. But where else am I? Those are the really the main ones. Those are about the main ones. Twitter, I think, is probably my preference if you want to approach me via social network. But by all means, drop by the Codex. Linguistic, where can we find you?
Well, I'm not all that present on social media, but, I do have a blog, ultimajourneys.blogspot.com. That's where I scribble down all of my thoughts as I play my way through Ultima. And I'm always reachable by email, linguisticdragon@gmail.com. Nice and simple.
Right.
Right.
Adric?
Oh, best place to see and talk to me is on Twitter. I have a couple of handles, but probably the best one is just my general purpose, at D Thompson. That's the letter D and the last name Thompson with no P. I have a Star Wars Tumblr. I have several Tumblrs, but Star Wars one is the one I post to with any regularity. projectfalcon.tumblr.com.
Cool. I will actually have to check that one out because I did not know about that. I'm assuming you're all stoked for TFA.
Extremely.
Actually, here's a question. Are you more stoked for The Force Awakens or Rogue One?
Oh, The Force Awakens.
Okay.
The continuation of the storyline and all that. You know, Force Awakens, I'll see at midnight. Rogue One, I'll see...
midnight the next day.
Rogue One, the first week. Yeah. You know, maybe the first day, but I'm not going to kill myself to do that.
I'm actually on the fence. I'm not sure which I'm more interested in. I mean, obviously, I do want to see the trilogy have their good conclusion. But at the same time, you know, just the thought of, you know, exploring some of the interstitial stories really, really appeals to me.
Oh, I'm definitely excited about those. But
yeah, so
I'm gonna pick one. Yeah,
the one I'm more worried about, if I'm worried about one, is this proposed one where they have, you know, Han Solo, apparently like younger Han Solo. Like, who the heck are they going to cast for that?
Yeah, well, actually, I can think of some people, but it sounds like they really want to go pretty young. You know, like around 12. Yeah, so it's going to be an unknown. You know, we don't know.
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to get a time machine and then.
Well, you know, they can almost do that now, actually. There's been a couple of movies. Well, they did it in reverse, but they're actually getting a lot better at this. Like, I mean, the obvious glaring example of where it didn't quite work is Tron Legacy, right? where they tried to digitally de-age Jeff Bridges. And it didn't really work too well. Like, he just looked a little bit rubber-faced and it wasn't quite good.
Yeah.
They went in the other direction in Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Peggy Carter as her brief appearance. And that was all digital makeup. And, you know, I liked watching that scene with my wife because she's a nurse and she often deals with patients who are, you know, old, in palliative, whatever. And, you know, her comment was just like, wow, they made her, like, she looks 90, you know, like she looks like she should in her state. So, you know, there they really nailed it. Now that was making someone older digitally, but there was another movie that I heard about recently where they digitally de-aged an actor and evidently they just like nailed it. So... I guess the tech's come a little ways since the last Tron outing. So who knows? Maybe they will just get Harry Ford to Who knows? All right. Well, always remember, if you'd like to recommend anyone for a shout out, you can shoot an email to ultimacodex@gmail.com. And again, suggest podcast topics. We've had a few people now do that. Offer commentary or criticism about the podcast episodes. Or hey, if you want to volunteer your time, jump in on an episode here and there, by all means. As well, there's the Ultimate Dragons communities. Definitely encourage you to participate in these because, you know, not only are the dragons themselves really, really great and there's some really neat conversation that goes on, but, you know, like I just said, you get sometimes either people who have worked on the old games or people who are working on the modern successors popping in to say hello and, you know, give their two cents about stuff. Dennis Lube is often posting little bits of art, concept art. He just posted those storyboards. Chris Spears, working on Shroud of the Avatar, of course, popped in to talk today. Definitely lively groups. That's the Ultimate Dragons group on Facebook that gets more of that benefit. There is also a group on Google+. And there is the underused UDIC hashtag on Twitter. And as well, in addition to, you know, hopping in, please consider liking the Facebook page for the Ultima series, facebook.com/theUltimaSeries. Following the Ultima Codex on Twitter or encircling the Ultima Codex on Google+, whatever social network you happen to favor, please also consider sharing the interesting content posted to those social media profiles with your own followers and friends. Don't share everything, just the stuff that you really like. And finally, there's the Patreon. So I think you all know how that works. You do get access to the spam episodes the day before they go live on the Ultima Codex. And you will be helping maintain and, with sufficient funding, expand the server infrastructure of the Codex to better deliver all the things you come looking for there at. And that's hopefully this podcast. But even if it's just Shroud of the Avatar's IRC channels, well, you know what? You can support those too. Because that's a pretty awesome community right there.
Adric, you gotta sign off.
Shade and Sweetwater.
Oh, how am I supposed to follow that one up?
Oh, I'm sure you'll think of something.
Until next time, folks.
All right, and until next time, all of you, Avatars, be virtuous.